And welcome to the Taylor Report. I surprised you, didn't I? And thank you, thank you, thank you to everybody who supported our program. We did very well last week, and CIUT did very well. And that's because we have an enthusiastic following of people who in this city and around the world, actually, on the Internet, really appreciate alternative radio and the kind of programming that I like to think that we do on the Taylor Report. We're going to talk today to Stephen Gowans. He's just written I saw it last night. It's right on the money. The issue is Washington's Plan B for Syria. It looks sometimes we think it's always been Plan B from the first day on, but we will be talking to Stephen about that. And we have a special treat in the studio. We're going to have Ann Garrison, who is from KPFA, and you can find her at anngarrison.com. And SFBay.com and a number of other places. Ann has won the Victoire Prize, as you listeners of this show knows, the award for those who have stood up for the Victoire Ingabire, who is still in prison in Rwanda and is, frankly, not high up on the priority list with Washington and London and, to the extent that anybody cares, Ottawa. But I think we're joined now by the man himself, Stephen Gowans. Are you there, Steve?
Oh, yes, I'm here.
Well, Steve, thanks very much for joining us. I was just saying to listeners that last night I read your article, U.S. Plan B for Syria, give Al-Qaeda more powerful weapons. That's Plan B. And I thought, well, that's, you know, once in a while we hear about it. Then I got up in the morning and all that anybody was talking about was Plan B. Let's start off. Where is this Plan B business? I thought they were having peace talks in Geneva. So why are we hearing about Plan B, which sounds rather dangerous when I read your article?
Yeah. Well, I think what I'd say is, you know, the U.S. game plan for Syria is guided by the ultimate objective of forcing Assad and his fellow anti-neocolonial Arab nationalists to step down and to yield power to a government that will surrender Syria's right to self-determination. Now, how they plan to achieve that, how the United States has planned to achieve this, was by sparking a war in the country and then making kind of hegemonic the narrative that the only way to peace is through regime change. Hence, peace and the achievement of the U.S. foreign policy goal become identical. So we've heard, you know, the United States say on several occasions that Assad has lost legitimacy and that he must step down. Mm-hmm. And Washington is talking again about so-called political transition and framing the Geneva talks as talks about achieving that political transition, in other words, about achieving a U.S. foreign policy goal. And the U.S. really isn't interested in peace in Syria. If it was truly interested in peace in Syria, it would withdraw support from the Al-Qaeda alliance. It would demand that its allies, like Turkey and Saudi Arabia and Qatar, withdraw support from Al-Nusra, which is really Al-Qaeda, and ISIS, too. I mean, certainly Turkey has been colluding and supporting ISIS. And it would also enter into an alliance with Syria to eradicate ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Instead, what the United States is interested in is Assad stepping down, and the route to forcing him to step down is to put military pressure on him by using Al-Qaeda, ISIS, that is, and Al-Nusra as their proxy. And then we go to the Geneva talks. And at the Geneva talks, now we say, okay, so we have this condition of war in the country. We want to establish peace. And the way to establish peace is to have a political transition, to have Assad step down.
Mm-hmm.
So the United States has now said, in answer to the question, well, what happens if the Syrian government doesn't agree to this political transition? What if Assad won't step down? And according to the Wall Street Journal last week, the United States step B, or rather Plan B, is to, quote, up the ante by providing more powerful weapons to what the United States calls the moderate rebels in Syria. And the more powerful weapons would be weapons that could be used to bring down Syrian warplanes, for example, or attack Syrian artillery positions. The United States and its allies have been providing arms and ammunition and training to the so-called moderate rebels, and as it turns out, to the immoderate rebels as well. And this would up the ante, as they say. But I think it also demonstrates that the United States is not particularly interested in peace. What it's interested in is forcing Assad to step down.
Yeah. And by the way, there is also this simplistic language they use, Assad stepped down. He is an individual. But, of course, they are talking about the entire infrastructure of his leadership, right? I mean, to play the game the way they do, oh, he has to go. If he said, well, you know, I have a really talented lieutenant and I'm happy to go back to being an ophthalmologist anyway, they'd say, no, that's not what we meant, right?
No, and they've always personalized it. And that's, you know.
It's like we work with crayons. Assad, that means something.
Their modus operandi, because you have to demonize an individual and attribute all of the problems within the country to an individual and say that the war is attributable to one individual who is a dictator or a madman or some kind of brute.
Yeah. When in fact they intend to get rid of them all. I mean, they had Mr. Gaddafi in Libya and they said he had to go. But what they meant was every last Libyan who had any were supporting him had to go.
Yeah, so it's not individuals, it's an ideology that has to go. And it's the individuals who carry that ideology that have to be eliminated. And, I mean, there is a similar shared ideology between Assad and Gaddafi, and that's an Arab nationalist kind of anti-neo-colonial ideology. That for the post-colonial Arab world said that we're going to take control of our resources and we're going to try to develop our countries in our own way, free from the domination of the West.
Mm-hmm. This is Stephen Gowans, by the way, and it's gowans.wordpress.com. And your essay focuses on the, of course, as quite often, the abuse of language or the manipulation, and the word that really runs through it all is this curious thing called the moderate. And one of the, you give an example of how you can become a moderate according to Washington. And as I read it in your essay, a moderate is the one who says, "I'm not going to kill the Christians. I'm going to give them a chance to convert." And so that's a sign of real moderation.
Yes. And that was Jabhat al-Nusra, or al-Nusra is...
Gee, they're warm-hearted people.
So I'll just call al-Nusra al-Qaeda. I mean, al-Nusra is really just a rebranding of al-Qaeda. It's al-Qaeda's franchise in Syria. And for a brief period, al-Qaeda, or al-Nusra, was trying to make itself seem more moderate than it is. And one of the ways it attempted to do that, with very little success, it was by saying, well, you know, we're not going to exterminate the Christian population of Syria. We won't exterminate the Shia. We won't exterminate anyone who doesn't share our religious views, so long as they agree to convert to our version of Islam. Yeah. So that was their view of moderation.
And when they said that, the Americans opened the bank vault and handed them more money.
But the word moderation and the way it's used is very interesting. You'll notice that it's never defined. You just use the word moderation because it connotes something desirable. But if you read press accounts in some of the leading U.S. newspapers very carefully, they do use the word moderate indiscriminately, kind of aping Washington. But they do also talk about the so-called moderate rebels in a way that reveals that they're not moderate.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, they'll often talk about the moderate rebel supported by the West or the United States as being aligned with or fighting alongside of or liaising with or being intermingled with or intertwined with or collaborating with or enmeshed with or cooperating with Al-Qaeda. Mm-hmm. And after you read that a number of times, it starts to become clear that these groups are interpenetrated with Al-Qaeda. And then when you pair that with the reality that's been acknowledged widely, that the rebel opposition to the government in Damascus is dominated by al-Nusra, that is al-Qaeda, mm-hmm. dominated by Islamic State, that what you're really looking at is a kind of an al-Qaeda-led alliance mm-hmm. of rebel groups. Most of those rebel groups receiving arms and ammunition and training from the United States and U.S. regional allies. The United States says that it's not giving arms directly to al-Qaeda, mm-hmm. but giving arms directly to Islamic State. But, you know...
But the arms end up in the hands of the guys who are the guys, most ruthless and most capable of using them.
Well, the guys who are aligned with, fighting alongside, liaising with, intermingled with, intertwined with, that's who they give the arms to. Yeah. So they can become a conduit for... arms supplies to these al-Qaeda groups. Mm-hmm. So that's one reason to be concerned about the moderates. But the other reason to be concerned is that these groups are ideologically similar to, if not indistinguishable from al-Qaeda.
Yes.
So, I mean, you could say, well, I have a concern that the United States is giving arms to rebel groups who are then passing the arms off to al-Qaeda and ISIS. But the groups that the United States is transferring arms to are essentially al-Qaeda organizations, mm-hmm. Ideologically similar, if not indistinguishable from al-Qaeda.
Yeah. By the way, they really don't mind. I get the impression that Washington sort of wants us to see their cynical maneuvers a bit. It's rather like saying, you really can't tell what we're going to do. We're capable of almost as a way of intimidating. I gave those things to what's-his-name, but he's using them. He gave them to a worse guy. But that's what happens when you don't do as we ask you to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
That they can't be sure what's going to happen. I notice, and you quote some of it too, the very cynical sort of CIA-type language where they justify needing to do these things, again, because they're up against, now they've included Russia, Iran in this. And the stakes being what they are, they get to take chances. They get to give things to people that might turn out really ugly. But I have I realize there's a point I want to make sure I ask you about, because we've been following in interviews with you over the years how they operate. And over the years, they've developed a language of so-and-so with a gun. He's pro-democracy. And I believe when they started this in 2011 – I'm losing track of how long this war has been on. People were pro-democracy. But now, in the place where they used to put the expression pro-democracy, they put the word moderate. So moderate about what? And are any of them pro-democracy?
No. Well, I shouldn't say absolutely not. There are probably a small number that are pro-democracy. But they seem to be, the rebel groups seem to be dominated by those who are attracted to the idea of establishing a constitution based on the Quran.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of democracy, that's the idea of government by humans. They would prefer a government that was, you know, according to the rules of God as given in the Quran, or a literal reading of the Quran.
Or a Saudi reading of the Quran.
Yes, the Saudi Wahhabist reading of the Quran, exceedingly sectarian, ultra-conservative.
Mm-hmm. Again, this is Stephen Gowans, gowans.wordpress.com, What's Left. And by the way, the title is U.S. Plan B for Syria, Give Al-Qaeda More Powerful Weapons. And that brings me to this matter of, you know, identifying moderates. So here's what I've been wanting to ask you is, the United States says, well, we're Plan B is we're going to make sure that if we don't get the agreement to remove Assad, then we will provide more advanced weapons. Now, they're talking about something called the MANPAD, which is a missile carried, as I understand it, by an individual combatant can carry it. And he could, with this, he's able to shoot down an airliner, for example. So when they give such a weapon to hit somebody they might call a moderate, doesn't that sound like it's an extremist giving a moderate a weapon? Because that's a big step.
Yeah, I mean, and there is a concern, certainly in the United States, that in the U.S. government, that you're giving very dangerous weapons to people who may eventually use them against you.
Well, we have Senator McCain saying, give them to them and tell them to shoot down Russian planes. And we watch Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, and she doubled down on no-fly zone. You start passing out a missile that can shoot down planes, and you are trying to eliminate Russia from the Syrian airspace. Sounds extreme to me.
It is.
I mean, Hillary's more extreme than the guys we're calling moderates, or even the ones they call extreme. Actually, the guy who's extreme walking around with a pocket knife is a threat to nobody. But you give him one of those, and you're the one who is the extremist.
Yes, and I mean, and there seems to be some division in Washington about, you know, how far should you go in arming these al-Qaeda groups, because not only they're opposed to the Syrian government, they could use these weapons against the United States. But all of this, I mean, is kind of interesting because, I mean, this tension between, you know, those factions of the U.S. government who want to arm the rebels to a high degree and that faction which is more cautious kind of revealed something interesting about the moderates. You'll recall that there was a lot of pressure placed on Obama to provide more arms to the rebels and that Obama was kind of cautious and resisting. And he kind of bristled at the pressure that was being put on him. And he told the New York Times columnist, Thomas Friedman, that the idea that there's a group of moderates in Syria that we can give arms to is a complete fantasy.
Yeah. You know, speaking of fantasy, you get us into – he's the president of what country after a quote like that? If I was – I know the – Friedman is not anybody that I have any use for, but you would think he would have said, you are the president, right? Because he gives that quote to Friedman, and somebody else gives missiles or deadly weapons to people that he says himself is a fantasy. But by the way, and again, this is Stephen Gowan's article, and it's terrific, gowans.wordpress.com. Please go there, read the article. It's got loaded with stuff. But here's a quote you have from Assad, and as you know, you're not supposed to quote the president of Syria because he's actually a monster, and it's not a government, it's a regime. But anyway, Assad says this about, he says, if Obama said the moderate opposition is fantasy, so do you send the money and armaments? Who do you send the money and armaments to? Reality. You don't send to the fantasy. You send it to the reality, and the reality are the extremists. I thought that was – what a bright – he captured it very well. Unfortunately, President Assad, of course, is not permitted to speak in this hemisphere that I know of. But could you elaborate on what you make of his point?
No, he made the point very well, very effectively. And I mean, the CIA there's a covert CIA program to fund and train rebels. The CIA claims to have trained, I can't recall, tens of thousands of rebels, which invites the question, who is it that they're sending money to? And I think Assad makes quite plain who it is that they're sending money to. They're sending money to the extremists. But this also becomes a matter of logic. I mean, there are only extremists in Syria, in opposition. I mean, the armed opposition is made up of extremists, if you want to talk about extremists as those who follow an Al-Qaeda-like ideology. Mm-hmm. So necessarily, that's who the arms are going to, extremists.
Mm-hmm.
Which might also account for for why it is that the CIA program is covert. Unlike, you recall, the Pentagon program, which was overt.
Mm-hmm.
And the Pentagon program was interesting because it was a program in which thousands of moderate rebels were going to be trained and armed by the Pentagon. And the Pentagon had an enormous budget of $500 million.
Mm-hmm.
This program was abandoned after the Pentagon was only able to recruit 54 moderate rebels to fight on its behalf, which is more evident that there is not a moderate opposition in Syria. The United States has tried to create one. In fact, the Syrian specialist or specialist in Syria, Joshua Landis, has pointed out that the United States on three separate occasions has gone into Syria and tried to create a moderate opposition because one didn't exist on the ground. And on all three occasions, their efforts failed spectacularly. So they're left with the CIA, which is therefore training covertly the non-moderates, which is essentially everyone in the armed opposition.
Yeah, I get the impression, reading your article, that the U.S. would be alarmed if there were moderates, because the moderates would say, why don't you leave us alone, or let's all go to the Geneva talks and get this thing settled. Who is representing the, quotes, moderates? There is supposed to be a meeting. There's something called the High Negotiating Committee. Where did they come from? Where is the headquarters of the High Negotiating Committee?
They're Saudi-backed. I mean, this opposition is a foreign-backed opposition. There was some argument and debate about whether a group called Arar al-Sham could participate in the talks. And Arar al-Sham appears to be al-Nusra in all but name. That is al-Qaeda in all by name.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at leading U.S. newspapers, they'll describe Arar al-Sham as essentially an al-Qaeda group. It might not have sprung from al-Qaeda, but it shares the same ideology and the same approaches, and it cooperates and is intermingled with and intertwined with al-Qaeda. The idea that this foreign-backed opposition that's at the Geneva talks is some kind of moderate opposition is a complete fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
A complete fantasy. And Kerry, in fact, has been pressed on this. You know, how can you regard Arar al-Sham as a moderate group? And he's just kind of ducked it and said, well, you know, I don't like to categorize these groups.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I want to bring in a state that rarely gets referred to. I don't know if it is directly to your article, although in your penultimate piece before this one, you took up this issue. I recall when the U.S. Decided on this, what they called the color revolutions in the Middle East, and they started celebrating Tunisia, were knocked over him, and then it was going to be Egypt, and then it was going to be was Libya, and then we come to Syria, and the joke, you read people like Thomas Friedman and others, there was a running joke saying, hello, Iran, you have a new neighbor. It's the U.S. Army. It's U.S. Air Force. We're your new neighbor. Ha, ha, ha. Now there's another new neighbor, and I wonder about Israel's making of all this, because they used to have let's call it a middle power, who couldn't, certainly no equal to them in Syria, but one who was resisting them in terms of not agreeing to a peace without the Golan Heights, etc. Now they find there's a lot of hardware there in Syria that is sort of the same level caliber as they have. That must be a great concern.
To the Israelis?
Yeah, to the Israelis. They have a new neighbor.
Yeah. Well, and the Israeli role in this is very interesting as well, because we want to talk about the moderate opposition as being really an al-Qaeda-led opposition. It might be pointed out that al-Qaeda controls the border between Syria and the Golan Heights in Israel. And Israel acknowledges that it has a working relationship with al-Qaeda along the border, a tactical relationship. They're extremely familiar with each other, they say. So, I mean, also, is Israel is backing al-Qaeda, along with the United States and Qatar and Saudi Arabia and Turkey. Another interesting thing about Israel is something rather kind of shocking, really, but maybe nothing is really shocking about Israel. The former Israeli ambassador to the United States, Michael Oren, who's now a member of the Knesset, said, you know, if we had to choose between ISIS and Assad, we'll take ISIS.
Mm-hmm. Which, yeah, I mean, that, by the way, it's kind of like sets the tone, right? You understand that's the strategic concept that they're operating from. And
yeah.
If they're looking for a happy result, it has to be on the ISIS side of the ledger.
He said this on the same day that John Kerry declared that ISIS is genocidal by self-proclamation, by ideology, and by action.
Yeah. The master speaks with several mouths here. You conclude on a point which I really think is very important to people understand. When they first started, they went knock-knock on Syria's door and told everybody, this guy is about to go. But they didn't go. And you discussed this about what is the options in front of the Syrian people, to fight or surrender. And you say that people seem to have underestimated them.
Yeah, I think that imperialist powers often underestimate the degree of resistance that they're going to face. And maybe we underestimate, people in the West underestimate the degree to which Western domination is resisted. And maybe that's because it's often not reported. But certainly throughout history, I mean, if we want to look at the history of European colonialism, every year there were major rebellions against European colonial powers, and this is simply an extension of the same thing. I mean, people take exception to being dominated and oppressed.
Yeah, you define this. This is basically an anti-colonial struggle. Your summary lines are fortunately for humanity, but unfortunately for the U.S. elite, on whose behalf the U.S. imperial project pivots. The targets of imperialist eruptions have often felt it better to fight than to submit. Syrians no less so than the long string of heroes in the service of human progress who have resisted programs of exploitation by fighting back. This is, in other words, a major moment in fighting neocolonialism. Am I right?
Yes, and Assad is a very articulate champion of this point of view, who says, you know, the United States doesn't get to decide who's going to be the ruler in Syria. It doesn't get to decide who the president is, mm-hmm. who has to step down. The Syrian people make that decision, not the United States, not Obama. Obama is not the president of Syria.
Yeah. Or the world either. One gets the impression that there are eyes watching this all around the world who hope the Syrian people prevail.
Yes, there are.
So, Stephen Gowans, it's always great to talk to you. This is a terrific piece, gowans.wordpress.com. I urge everybody to read it, and thank you very much for being with us.
Okay, thank you, Phil.
Okay, bye-bye, Steve. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Thank you again for all the support for the program and for this station. We're going to take a quick break, and we get to talk to Ann Garrison when we come back.